Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Carvajal, Carvajal en banda derecha para Brahim, Brahim en el piquito, levanta la cabeza buscando la cabeza de Bellingham, remata Bellingham, segundo palo, gol, 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 gol,
Welcome along to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. My name is Ruri Barlow. I'm joined by Paco Polit. We're off the back of a thrilling weekend of La Liga action once again. I mean, it's been a really fantastic season. It's been an entertaining season. It's been an intense season. But this was probably up there with the best weekend, certainly in terms of goals. Just on the Sunday alone, we had, 10, 16, 22 goals, Paco. Paco Polit, how are you doing?
Very well. Pretty excited to speak about the weekend, which is about to finish when we record this. And obviously, as you said, interesting to watch how a competition which had been slammed in the past for not really delivering on the promise of excitement and goals and whatsoever, suddenly you come across a few bangers in the same day. Osasuna Getafe was an excellent game overall. Also, we have all the spiciness and controversy surrounding that Real Madrid-Almeria game. Betis-Barça, more, level than expected at the beginning. Because Barca were, very, very threatening in the first half, but suddenly Betis had a comeback and Barca really had to struggle and go down and dirty with their grittiness to win the game. And finally, Girona capping off the Sunday with a masterful masterclass against Sevilla, which were absolutely thrashed by Dobbik and his teammates.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll kind of address those top three first and foremost. I'll just kind of run through the results quickly. Girona were last up on Sunday night against Sevilla, 5-1. Dovbik with a six-minute hat-trick, which puts them level on goals with Jude Bellingham on 14 in the Pichichi race. That was after Sevilla taking the lead through Adria Pedrosa, and then Stuani and Sigankov added goals. Barcelona beat Betis 4-2 away from home. They were in control. Ferran Torres with a brace. Isco hit back with a 90-second brace in the second half. But Barcelona's Joao Felix appearing on time with the last minute to take them 3-2 ahead, and Ferran Torres completing his hat-trick just before the end. Almeria looked as if they were on for a huge upset with Largi Ramazami scored in the opening minute, followed by a brilliant strike from Edgar González. Second half comeback, we've seen this happen before. 99th minute, Dani Carvajal gets the winner after Vinicius Jr. and Jude Bellingham had levelled things up. Plenty of controversy in that one, as we will come on to though as well. Osasuna got a big win against Getafe, 3-2, and a brilliant, brilliant Jesús Soreto goal to kind of get the winner in this one. Really something we'll have to discuss. On Saturday night, Real Sociedad went away to Vigo and won 1-0 with a Bryce Mendes goal. Valencia beat Athletic Club at Mestalla on Saturday evening as well. Villarreal drew 1-1 with Real Mallorca, with Mallorca getting Javi Yabes, I think it was, an added time, an academy player from Mallorca, grabbing the equaliser after Gonzalo Guedes had made his debut. Las Palmas beat Rayo Vallecano 2-0 on the Saturday afternoon game. And then Alaves, Friday night, beat Cadiz with big consequences, which we will come on to in the second part of the show. But I think probably the place to start here, as much as I would like to start it with Girona, has to be at the Santiago Bernabeu. 3-2, a thrilling game. Real Madrid get back into it, get the win eventually, but this was mired in much controversy. There was three VAR decisions that were kind of overturned the referee's original decision. That was the first time in La Liga history. They all went in favour of Real Madrid, as Ana Maria had a goal disallowed. Real Madrid then had one given for a handball, that it was given as a handball, and then they had the goal given from Vinicius Jr. And then a penalty as well. It was highly, highly controversial. And fair to say, Ana Maria weren't happy. After the match, they tweeted, don't expect us to publish a match kind of report. You all saw what happened. Gaizka Garitano was furious. Marc Boubi came out after the game and said that somebody wanted Real Madrid to win, and that's kind of what happened. Paco, take us through this, because you had your strong views too. You said it damages La Liga, mm-hmm. and you said it makes it seem like a scam to people who are coming from outside. But
yeah, it basically makes everyone who is onlooking from the outside or from, you know, abroad believe that this is a fixed competition, because at this point, you know, the game was the refereeing in this game was atrocious in many, many levels, and there were a large number of other plays which were just omitted by the refereeing. For example, there was a blatant hit by Vinicius Jr. to a defender on the face, which was blatantly also overlooked. As you said, all of the rundown of the controversial calls by the VAR always went in favor of Real Madrid, which was mind-blowing, because, for example, I think Bellingham's first goal, there was an also blatant foul by Rudiger, you know, getting on top of a defender when trying to head the ball, which was pretty obvious for whoever was watching the game, but the referee, both him and the VAR room, decided to just, you know, omit that part of the play. Later, Vinicius' goal, you know, it was a handball. It was a clear handball. Every single replay of the play was a handball. And they allowed that goal. And ultimately, you know, that goal being disallowed for Almeria in the second half was also... And also the 11 minutes plus, you know, extra time for the second half. You know, it was everything happened towards Real Madrid, you know, overturning the scoreline. And I absolutely understand Almeria fans, Almeria players, the, you know, Garitano, Almeria's manager, because ultimately they lack that kind of media power or media backing to really make their voice to be heard in these kinds of daylight robberies, like the one that they suffered. In such a scenery and in such a venue like Bernabeu. And especially as they are, you know, bottom of the league, they haven't won a game, they are enduring a very, very, you know, harsh season upon them. And, you know, even after all of that, you could see many fans traveling away from home, jumping on their cars, going all the way over to Madrid, watching the game on the stands, and suddenly they are 2-0 on top in the first half. You know, they had the chance of delivering maybe one of the biggest blows of the season to a competition contender, and also becoming a turning point for themselves in the league. And the way they got, you know, I think they got a disservice made to both to them and to the whole La Liga in the way the refereeing was, you know, so focused upon aiding in some way Real Madrid to win this game.
Yeah, Carlo Ancelotti came out after the game and said that he understands Almeria's frustration with the VAR, but that in his mind all of the decisions were correct. Is there any kind of argument for Ancelotti here? Does he have a point? Because, I mean, it is one thing for VAR to kind of intervene, and it's quite another for the decisions to actually be correct. I mean, yeah, I have my opinions. Paco, it sounds like you don't think that Ancelotti was being either totally honest or seeing it with kind of a neutral view there.
Well, obviously Ancelotti is going always to say that they are, whenever they get, you know, a bad refereeing decision against them. They are the big teams, and whenever they get benefited, like tonight, that everything went down fine in his book. So I didn't expect more. I didn't expect less from Ancelotti. Back in the day, I had quite a strong opinion upon what Ancelotti meant for football. I consider him, you know, a true gentleman in many ways. But that kind of public opinions regarding his behavior, at least in my view, have changed quite a lot in the last year since he blatantly lied in that Valencia Real Madrid game, you know, accusing all of the whole ground of racism when only a handful of individuals were the ones, you know, to blame. And then I realized, and after Ancelotti has done also a couple of things which were a bit wobbly, morally wise, that it comes down to, you know, every single manager protecting his own team and, you know, saying everything which is going to appeal and make happy his own fan base. I understand that, I respect that, but, you know, the opinion that I used to have back in the day regarding Ancelotti has drastically changed, and tonight is, you know, just another page in that new book being written.
Yeah, I think the reason this feels so injurious is because, yeah, this is, like you mentioned, it's an Almeria side that are the ultimate underdogs.
Yeah,
they're doomed. All season.
They have, yeah, you know, their chances are so slim to none at this point that maybe winning, you know, sometimes it has happened in the past. Winning such a massive game as the one that they were playing today could have meant maybe the you know, heaven or hell. Such a massive difference towards the morale and towards the, you know, all of their hopes regarding the you know, the potential shot of saving themselves from relegation. But, you know, it just seems that Almeria can't catch a break. And you have to add the fact that Garitano was sent off by the referee in the extra time in the second half. And also, I believe that Gonzalo Melero is going to be harshly manhandled by the referee committee, because after the game he, you know, was making strong statements about the whole issue regarding the ref and his calls and the daylight robbery that they suffered. And, you know, refs in Spain don't really take well that you doubt their professionalism, which is at this point in an all-time low, by the way, but they can't, you know, ban me for 4 games, but they can do exactly that to Gonzalo Melero. So I expect a harsh treatment and a harsh, you know, penalty being settled upon him.
Now that that's kind of out the way, in terms of kind of this game, I mean, it was quite a big 3 points, because if Real Madrid had lost that game, then it would have been the gap down to just 4 points from Barcelona. It would have been 5 if they'd drawn, obviously. It kind of feels to me like, unless we get Girona miracle, that Real Madrid are just too far ahead right now to really can contemplate losing enough games for Barcelona or Atleti or Athletic even to win this league, unless it's Girona. And today again was evidence enough of that for me. There's a lot of games they've not played well in this season, or they've been fine, but they seem to keep pulling out these results, don't they, Paco?
Yeah, I think that's the way it works for Real Madrid. Actually, there was a quite interesting moment during the halftime when Almeria were 2-0 up, and Ancelotti didn't go into the locker room. He stood outside on top of the pitch, and he was already, you know, delivering his instructions and his you know, orders to the three players, Brahim, Joselu, and so on, that were going to come on the second half. So it really means that, first up, the whole Real Madrid squad knew that they had bottled the first half and they had done a, you know, awful job throughout the first 45 minutes, and also the confidence by Ancelotti that they are big boys at this point and they don't really need their manager to tell them that they had done awfully in the first half. So that's why Ancelotti kept himself outside of the locker room. I believe that a couple of the big players like Carvajal and so on might have, you know, delivered a couple of yells inside the locker room, telling their teammates that, you know, we often say in Spanish, tenemos que espabilar, you know, we have to do better, we have to improve as quickly as possible in the second half. And you could definitely notice the you know, Real Madrid's attitude and drive and motivation were up a few notches in the second half. But again, if the refereeing hadn't been so decisive and so capital in this game and so crucial in this game, I don't really think that Real Madrid would have pulled off the win.
Yes, and speaking of kind of Girona and that miracle, the miracle is still going. They are top of the league. They are a point ahead of Real Madrid, although Los Blancos obviously have a game in hand. 5-1, they thumped Sevilla, as we mentioned earlier. Dovbyk, just for the first 10 minutes of this game, Sevilla kind of looked pretty good. They were pressing kind of quite high. They were getting some joy against Girona, but Dovbyk just tore through them in the space of that kind of 10 minutes. And from that point, the game was kind of over. And this was party football again from Girona, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was amazing. You know, the way Girona were able to once again overturn the odds against them, especially after those first, as you said, 10, 12 minutes before Girona leveling the game. Sevilla's first couple of minutes were quite, you know, decent overall. Once again, Isaac Romero making, you know, his mark in the game. He scored twice in Copa del Rey only a few days ago, and he got another goal tonight. But it was a mirage, you know. It was, in Spanish, a espejismo, because suddenly Girona got their machinery working and, you know, gears began turning. And before Sevilla really knew what had happened to them, they had been run over by a truck. And that truck had the name of Artem Dovbyk behind his shirt. The goals that he scored, you know, Savinho on the left wing was absolutely unstoppable throughout the whole game. I think that Savinho's individual performance was even mightier than the one delivered by Dovbyk, because he was crucial. I think he had 3 assists overall, and, you know, he was massive. And yeah, his runs on the wing were perfect for Dovbyk, heading home the first one. He later finished the second one with an assist by Porto. Dovbyk's third goal was excellent. You know, just the way he was on his own in the attacking front, he got control of the ball. He was able to maneuver with it and just run against the opposite goal. And, you know, from outside the box, on the limit of the box, just a mighty strike to score the third. And suddenly, after going on top in the 10th minute, 10 minutes later, Sevilla were trailing 3-1. And that was just impossible to overcome. And during the second half, Girona were just playing the waiting game, waiting for the perfect moment to strike like a, you know, a cobra snake. And they actually did. The number of shots on target was 8 for them. They got 5 goals. So that speaks volumes of their efficiency, their accuracy, just their, you know, the way they clinically finished. Sigankov with the fourth, and finally Stuani once again heading home the, you know, finishing from inside the box the fifth in the 89th minute. So overall, Sevilla didn't know what hit him. I think that they were just unable to hit back once Girona started playing at their finest, at their best. And yeah, another team which visits Montilivi and sadly for them has to leave with a massive sack of goals being allowed on the back of their trunk.
Yes, absolutely. And Sevilla now still 17th, just a point above Cadiz in the relegation zone. And Granada have their game tomorrow on Monday night against Atletico Madrid, although they can't make it out just yet. Just on Girona before we kind of move on to Barcelona. Real Madrid scored 3 goals today. They're the second top scorers in the division, but Girona are now 8 goals clear of them in terms of goals scored. 51 goals in 21 games. And I think one of the things as well that really illustrates just how good this Girona side has been is the fact that today they were missing quite a few players. Mm-hmm. I mean, Alex Garcia was suspended. They're missing centre-backs. I mean, Juanpe was starting today for one of the first times with Eric Garcia out, and David Lopez as well suspended. And Juanpe had to come off with an injury, and so you had Atal, I'm going to have to try this name, Antal Jakobishvili. That was actually not as hard as I expected. But yes, 19-year-old Hungarian defender coming on, first appearance, did pretty fine. And Aleix Garcia is obviously the conductor of that attack. they didn't really miss a beat. They looked like Girona, and I think that's, again, one of the, I mean, all we've done this season is praise Girona, but one of the things that we should praise them for, and in particular Miguel Gutierrez as well, mm-hmm. just continues to grow. There's a play with Savio on the kind of left-hand side where the ball kind of is dropping towards Savio. He chests it inside. Miguel Gutierrez, first time, back-heels it behind the defender and latches onto it. Dovbik gets onto Savinho's cross, and they end up just kind of, I think it's Porto hits the bar in the end after he gets laid mm-hmm. off by Dovbik. But it was just absolutely delightful football. And yeah, if there's such a thing as required watching, then that is Girona this season. Generally, Barcelona have not been that this season, but they were pretty watchable tonight. 4-2 win over Betis. And I think this was, aside from kind of 10, 15, 20 minutes where Betis really kind of got into the game and looked dangerous, Isco obviously with that brace, this was probably one of Barcelona's best performances in the season, and all the more sweet when Joao Felix comes and gets a very important winner right at the end, Paco.
Yes, and actually I think that they were, you know, 100% on target. Four shots on target, four goals, so excellent accuracy for Barca in that sense, even though they amassed a couple of chances being disallowed by the VAR, I believe a couple of disallowed goals by Ferran, also by Lewandowski in the first half. But yeah, as you said, I think that the first half hour by Barca was pretty remarkable, with Ferran, you know, being the one with that kind of magnet inside the box, being able to finish every single ball which was, you know, moving, surrounding his influence area. But once again, they were very close to their own demise, and it had to be João Félix, you know, coming from obscurity, because he wasn't really, you know, nothing really great to say about João Félix before the goal, to solve and save the day. Regarding Betis, I think that they weren't that impressive throughout the game. They only had, as you said, maybe 15-20 minutes in the second half when they were able to level the game with that Isco brace and overall him commanding the operations from the midfield. But yeah, Barca improved a little bit, you know, both in their self awareness, you know, performance overall, football play style, and especially, you know, accuracy and ability to score improved a bit over what they showed against the opposition in the Spanish Super Cup. But again, I think that even though Xavi insists in press conferences speaking about La Liga and their chances of becoming the champions again and so on, I think that their level of consistency is a couple of steps below what Real Madrid offer and obviously what Girona are offering. So maybe at this point, I'm not saying that Barca should settle for third, especially as, you know, you have Athletic Club over there, Atletico Madrid after, you know, winning that Madrid derby the other day and moving on to the later rounds in Copa del Rey. I think that the kind of motivation for Atleticos has become increased, and you know, and they are going to be a tough nut to crack. But yeah, Barca at this point, they only can hope of securing the third spot and just keep winning and hoping that both Real Madrid and Girona stumble. Not hopeful or not likely at this point, because of the, as I said, the level of consistency being showed by the two teams at the top of the league. But unfortunately for Barca, they have had their fair share of missteps in the past, so playing the waiting game is the only chance that they have.
You mentioned Betis there, yeah. I mean, you look at kind of their team today and you do kind of see signs of them kind of struggling. Abner Vinicius is not entirely convinced since he came in to replace Alex Moreno. Socrates Papastathopoulos, obviously, he was brought in as kind of an emergency signing and looked a bit emergency today. Bellerin has been up and down as well. Johnny Cardoso started his kind of first game, I think it was, for them in La Liga. The first start, at least. Asani Jao is obviously only 18. Luis Enrique has been inconsistent. So it is quite a fresh team for Betis. It's not the team that we've been kind of used to over recent years. But I guess as well for Barcelona, the one thing that's kind of been frustrating fans more than anything is the fact that it's been a lack of progress under Xavi in recent months. It doesn't seem to be going in the direction Today they started with Pau Cubarsí. He made his starting debut in La Liga, 16 years of age. Lamine Yamal, for me, I mean, Torres got the goals and was obviously probably man of the match, even though Isco was given it somehow again. Lamine Yamal, for me, was the most impressive, the most dangerous. And also Lewandowski was taken off with half an hour to go or so. It was Vitor Roque that was brought on. And ultimately, which while Felix was the one to make the difference. But are we kind of seeing a bit of a shift in Xavi? Is he starting to look at the older guys and say, look, if you're not going to perform, if you're not going to win these games, then al banquillo, I'm going to bench you.
Yes, and I think that he's taking the appropriate stance towards this whole issue, because ultimately his job is on the line. And the amount of rumours, you know, surrounding Barca's bench have reached such a level where Xavi must think solely about self-preservation. And if that means benching veteran players, so be it, especially if the youngsters deliver in such a way as they did tonight. As you said, Lamine Yamal possibly was the MVP of the game, even though he didn't get a goal on his resume, but his performance was mighty on the wing. I think that in the midfield, Gundogan also had a remarkable game alongside Frenkie de Jong. At the back, whenever you have Araujo besides you, it's always maybe the closest things to 100% guarantee that things are going to go down in an appropriate level to your interests. And that's what happened with Pau Cubarsí. On his debut, Xavi isn't really afraid of making these players to have big minutes during the season. We have seen that, for example, with Fermín lately too. And yeah, Araujo and Pau did a good job throughout the whole game, even though in those 15-20 minutes of Betis dominance in the second half, they suffered a bit. But yeah, I think that Xavi is trying to shift that kind of responsibility of pulling off the wins from the veterans into the youngsters, in the same way other teams have been doing exactly that. For example, Valencia, we're going to speak about them in a few minutes, but they have done that. They have delivered most of the relevance and most of the pressure into the youngsters, and the youngsters have been stepping up to the plate for most of the time. So that's exactly what happened tonight with Barca. And if you add the fact that Ferran Torres was on his, you know, tiburón mode, shark mode, with that accuracy finishing inside the box, and as I said earlier, with that kind of magnet into every single loose ball which went inside, overall, yeah, Barca suffered more than expected, but ultimately you can't say that the win was undeserved.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. That will wrap up the first half of the show. We're going to take a very quick break and then we'll be back to you with another sacking in La Liga. Don't go anywhere.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome back to the second half of the show. It's Paco Polite joining myself, Rudy Barlow. I promised you sacking discussion, and Alaves have sacked manager Sergio Gonzalez after, I think it's his 17th game without a win at Cardiff. It goes right back to September. I mean, they've been pretty poor. They're in the relegation zone. A Luis Rioja penalty, a stupid penalty as well, committed by Cardiff. Condemned them in this game to a defeat, which moves Alaves up to 12th, and big ups to them and Luis García Plaza. But yeah, the writing was kind of on the wall for Sergio for quite some time, wasn't it, Paco?
Yes, I think that his latest run of results, especially as you said, losing on the road against Alaves, which is ultimately a direct enemy in that race to avoid the relegation, also the way they lost at Nuevo Mirandilla last week against Valencia, allowing 4 goals on their own home, losing on the road against Granada. I think that they picked points against Real Sociedad and Las Palmas too, and also against Osasuna. But, you know, getting knocked out by Arandina and Copa del Rey didn't help earlier. And their run of draws was five draws in La Liga, five consecutive draws in La Liga, since losing against Real Madrid back in November. Cadiz's last win was against Villarreal on September 1st. So, yeah, obviously, reasons were stacked against Sergio González. The cards were stacked against him, and the odds too. And, ultimately, Cadiz wanted to have a couple of, chances of pulling a miracle and try to overturn things. And, the board, even though Sergio managed to just scrape past the relegation spots in the last 2-3 seasons, I think that the board thought that his run was over and he had nothing more to add into the squad. So yeah, now the process begins of choosing and picking a replacement, and it's going to be very, very hard because ultimately Cadiz is one of the smallest budgets in La Liga. Their squad isn't really remarkable in any sense.
Mentioned that in terms of the squad, and yeah, I kind of look at this. We've remarked on many times that Cadiz have one of the kind of bottom three budgets they have done for
the
few
spoken
years.
About this quite a lot in this show. Yeah,
yeah, and Las Palmas, I mean, Las Palmas have kind of reevaluated or revalued their squad because they're doing so well. But I look at the table, and Las Palmas, Alaves, maybe Granada, but I'd still kind of give Granada an edge over Cadiz. Mm. In terms of quality, those are the only kind of couple of teams that I would mark out that Cadiz are anything like, but they're probably amongst the bottom three sides in terms of individual quality, in my view. Is there any hope for the manager that comes in to try and get more out of them? Do they have enough? I mean, you look at goals, which is their big issue. They've scored just 15 goals all season in 21 games. And Chris Ramos is a decent, hard-working striker, but probably not laden with goals. Mm. Brian Ocampo is good from out wide, but not a goal scorer. Darwin Machis at times does get goals. Roger Marti has in the past. Sergi Guardiola has a few in the past. Negredo too. They've got a lot of strikers, but nobody that you can really rely on, do they?
Yeah, back in the day, remember when Choco Lozano was there and he was their best striker. And I've seen Choco Lozano 12 years ago, I think, in Valencia's academy when he was a youngster. And by the way, he isn't really having his chances over at Getafe. But yeah, losing these kind of players who suddenly fit perfectly into a squad was damning on Cadiz. And yeah, we have to compare them to the rest of the teams that race to avoid relegation. I think that Cadiz have the worst squad of the league. Not bottom three. I think that the worst squad of the league, quality-wise, would be Cadiz. But which was Sergio's, miracle in the last couple of seasons? He was able to build a very, very strong side, very, hard-working, very gritty, very, they made themselves a force to be reckoned with whenever playing at home at Nuevo Mirandilla. And everyone knew that they were in for a harsh time. Maybe not hard with D, but harsh with SH, whenever they played over at Cádiz, because they were a very, very tough team. I think that Fali, their central defender, represents everything which Cádiz was back in the day. And this season so far, they have just been unable to replicate that kind of hard-working attitude, grittiness, and overall, teams have found it very, very easy to win over at Cádiz, and that has been ultimately damning for the manager. But Almeria, we saw it tonight against Real Madrid, have a better squad. Granada has better players. Sevilla, Villarreal, obviously so. Celta, Vigo also. I think that keeping Benitez as a manager is a risky choice, but I think ultimately it's going to work for them. Mallorca also surprised me because they should be getting better results overall. Rayo Vallecano mid-table already, and you know, last season they were fighting for Europe, so I think that they have better squad. And Alaves, that should be more or less in the same tier than Cádiz. They were able to sign, for example, a massive player in this market, Carlos Vicente, coming from Racing Ferrol, who is an excellent, excellent winger, and they are already reaping the benefits from signing him, because he has been huge for Alaves in the last couple of games. So yeah, we suddenly we have done the rundown and we are already in the 11th place. So yeah, unfortunately for Cádiz, the manager who is brought in is going to have maybe the toughest job of his career, because ultimately only a couple of days pending from this winter transfer market, and Cádiz don't have the cash to be splurged. So he will have to do with what he has, and what he has at this point isn't really that much.
Yeah, absolutely. And and yeah, it's going to be a very, very uphill task for Cádiz. But we have seen them look kind of down and out before, and that's when Sefio came in and did commit or did bring about his miracle at the time. So we shall see, maybe Cádiz can perform it again. I was speaking to somebody with kind of Osasuna links here, and they beat Getafe 3-2. Obviously, Iker Muñoz with a very good goal. Raúl García de Haro opened the scoring. Getafe looked like they were getting back into it. They had scored twice in 4 minutes through Borja Mayoral and Maximovic. And then Jesús Arezzo with what has been compared to Roberto Carlos' kind of iconic sideline strike against Tenerife. It really was something else. It goes in off kind of the far post, and it's a magnificent strike. And yeah, the Osasuna person who shall remain nameless for now was saying that we had to dedicate the whole show to him. So so yeah, it's not the whole show, but wax lyrical on this goal, and a big win for Osasuna over a decent Getafe side.
Yeah, especially as things went south for them in the second half, when they thought that they had the game under control. You know, they got 2-0 up very, very quickly in the first half, commanding with the perfect attitude, with El Sadar pressing forward. And overall, I think that Osasuna are slowly coming back to that kind of football level that they showed last season, which ultimately allowed them to fight for European spots in this previous round last summer. And they had the chance of killing the game very early. By the way, Iker Muñoz's goal was also quite great. But yeah, Getafe are just the... Getafe can be easily compared to Jason Voorhees of the Friday 13th series. You know, whenever you think that he's done, he comes back to life once again, and he shows that he can harm you and mess you up quite badly. And that's what Getafe did in the second half. Enes Unal had been quite awful in my view in the first half, but he suddenly resurrected in the second, and Borja Mayoral scored the 2-1. Later, Maximovic, only 3 minutes later, scored the leveler. And we had a game with 20 minutes to go. And I think that Arezzo's goal was obviously a strike of massive luck. But again, these kinds of goals happen sometimes. Spanish listeners, or Spanish-born and English-speaking listeners, and maybe listeners from abroad too, might remember that we have a perfect example of this kind of goal, both in La Liga and in international competitions, because Roberto Carlos scored a very similar one back in the day, obviously in the opposite side of the pitch in Tenerife. And Andoni Goikoechea, who was a player for Spain's national team in 1994, he scored a screamer, very, very similar to this one, against Germany in the 1994 World Cup. which was, you know, the first thing, the first picture which came to mind after watching Areso's goal live was Goikoetxea's massive strike in the World Cup 30 years ago already. Time flies. So, yeah, massive goal, massive win for Osasuna, and they are already, you know, mid-table after suffering highs and lows in the last few months. But again, I expect greatness from this team, from Jacob Arrasate, from Braulio Vázquez, their sports director, and overall from an organization which is great overall and an example to follow by any mid-tier or even low-tier squads in La Liga if they want to thrive and succeed.
It's a very heady company that Jesús Areso is in there, but congratulations to him and to Osasuna for yeah, if you haven't seen it, go and check it out, because it is really a phenomenal goal and one that doesn't quite make sense. You have to watch it a few times to work out kind of what exactly has happened and why it's ended up in the net, but yeah, fantastic strike. Moving on to kind of the European race again, we'll just kind of make our way back up the table. Athletic Club, you mentioned earlier, kind of just behind Barcelona, but they did drop 3 points against Valencia. This was quite a shock for me. I really expected Athletic to get a result. I mean, it's kind of came out of nowhere, but Valencia, I mean, I've said it before, they're a tough team to kind of chew on for those bigger sides sometimes, especially at Mestalla. Hugo Duro got the big winner, but they did pretty well to stymie an Athletic side which has just been kind of running through sides. How did they do it, Paco?
Well, I think that overall the game was, you know, the game deserved a draw for both sides. I think it was very, very, very leveled overall and very balanced throughout the whole game. Athletic had their moments of dominance. Valencia had their own moments to score. And ultimately it was, you know, spark of brilliance coming from Gaya in the left wing with an incredible cross, you know, a first touch, incredible cross on the wing, and Hugo Duro being able to, you know, take advantage of the mistake by the central defender and head home. And later Valencia were able to really show how slowly but steadily their squad, their very, very young squad with players who are 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, they have slowly been amassing that kind of experience to send games to sleep in the last few minutes. Back in the day, especially back in the day under Baraja, when he came first to Valencia at the beginning of February last year, Valencia lost a large number of games in the extra time. And so far in the last couple of months, they have been able to really nail down that kind of you know, maturity to don't leave the game and the scoreline to let go of their grasp. So yeah, fourth win in a row for Valencia. They have the best streak in the competition at this point, alongside Real Madrid and Girona, obviously. And you know, suddenly all of the gossip and you know, chit chat surrounding Valencia in the city have shifted from, you know, the race towards salvation and achieving 42 points as soon as possible. Suddenly fans are already dreaming about fighting for Europe and so on. Myself, I'm much more cautious, because in the same way Valencia have managed to win the last four games, they are perfectly capable of losing four games in a row. I've seen that in the past, so I wouldn't, you know, make my mind upon, you know, leaving behind the aim of salvation. I think that Valencia need to focus on winning 3-4 more games. I think that 2-3 games should make the trick. And if they are able to achieve that before, for example, before February or March has finished, then we can seriously speak about Valencia going gung-ho towards fighting for European spots, which would be, in any regular season, historically wise, a lesser objective for Valencia, because they should be aiming for a top four spot because of tradition, because of history, and because of how big and massive the club was back in the day. But unfortunately, due to Peter Lim's mismanagement of the club, Meriton were the ones to settle at the beginning of the season publicly. Lei Hunchan, the president, was the one to say it, that, you know, remaining in La Liga was the goal this season. And fortunately for everyone, Baraja is doing an excellent job, a perfect job, I would say, with all of the youngsters, and they have been overachieving so far. We have three teams at this point overachieving, all of them in their own way. Obviously Girona, obviously Las Palmas, who has been surprising everyone at this point, and surprisingly to Valencia. I think that the level of, you know, overachieving that they have accomplished is very remarkable, and I think that all of the merit has to be delivered to both the players and the staff, because the sports direction and the management of the club have helped in absolutely nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned Carlos Vicente earlier for Alaves. He was heavily linked with Valencia and a number of other clubs, but ultimately seems as if they didn't get the green light from above to recruit him. But we'll leave it there for kind of La Liga. I mean, just a final note I want to say, Real Sociedad go into battle with Celta again for a second time on Tuesday. I don't think they're actually leaving Vigo, but thoughts are with Ian Munoz, who tore his cruciate ligament. He'll be out for 8-9 months. I think it's the fifth cruciate ligament injury they've had in the last 2.5-3 years. So yeah, it is a lot, and thoughts are with him. Kieran Tierney is obviously their alternative at left back, and a very good one. But given they're in Europe and in the Copa del Rey, they're going to have to compete. And yeah, just before we wrap up, I want kind of one thought or one thing to look out for in quite a tasty Copa del Rey quarterfinal slate. Celta Vigo, as I was saying, at home to Real Sociedad. Real Mallorca take on Girona at home on Wednesday night. The late game on Wednesday night is a humdinger. It is Athletic Club San Mamés Barcelona Copa del Rey Classic. And then Atleti face Sevilla at the Metropolitano on Thursday night as well. Anything you're particularly looking forward to, or just straight down the middle, Athletic Barcelona Copa Classic, as I was saying?
I have one comment about every draw. Celta could easily, you know, we've seen that back in the day with centenary teams and centenary clubs. Valencia back in the day in 2019, they were struggling in La Liga, but Copa del Rey suddenly became their salvation overall for the whole season. And you know, Celta beating Valencia, for example, last week, moving on to quarterfinal, playing at home over at Balaidos against a mighty side like Real Sociedad, who are also, you know, they have become some sort of specialists in the last few seasons in this competition. They won it a couple of years ago. It's going to be a very interesting clash. Once again, I always think that master and magician Rafael Benitez Maudes has another ultimate trick inside of his sleeve. Regarding Mallorca-Girona, obviously the favorites are Girona because of their form. But again, on a single game, a 90-minute game, playing away from home and also playing against Mallorca with a very experienced and veteran manager like El Vasco Javier Aguirre, it could easily become a booby trap for them. Athletic Barça, I think it's up for grabs, but in this case, I think that Barça are in for trouble because, you know, Ernesto Valverde, former Barça manager, he had a great run, in my view, as a Barça's manager, and in my view, too, he was unfairly sacked back in the day in 2020, in January, and he has been doing wonders with Athletic Club. Remember their philosophy of not really signing players from abroad or from outside the Basque country and so on, and with that kind of limitations that they settle upon themselves, they have been also overperforming this season. So playing at San Mamés, mighty ground, mighty sanctuary for football in our country, it's going to be a great game to watch, and Barça are in for trouble. And finally, Atletico Sevilla. I would say that Sevilla faced this game with a 1% chances of winning. But again, Quique Sánchez Flores was a former Atletico de Madrid manager. He really knows how to ruffle feathers and, you know, play into Atletico's weaknesses if they have any. So if Atletico de Madrid are able to play with Griezmann on his top level and Morata scoring and so on, they should have zero trouble, you know, knocking out Sevilla. But again, Atletico play on Monday, and later on Thursday, they have only 3 days to recover. towards this game, and Sevilla, even when injured in La Liga and suffering and struggling, they are always a very, very dangerous side whenever playing Copa del Rey.
Absolutely. Plenty to look forward to, and we'll be back on Thursday night to kind of wrap up and review those games in our premium subscription. So go, and if you aren't already, subscribe to us at llonline.substack.com and upgrade to hear that. But yeah, keep an eye across our written pieces there as well if you aren't already. But yes, thank you very much to Paco. Thank you to the listener for joining us after another, as I say, entertaining, thrilling, controversial, very, very good weekend of La Liga at any rate. And yes, I will bid you a good semana and adios.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.